Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
You have probably heard of the Internet of Things, how more and more of your appliances, or really anything you use, can have an Internet connection. Can you imagine getting a text from your refrigerator? Well, if you were grocery shopping and it was taking inventory of its contents, that might not be so bad. But your digital expert, Michael Theodore, has asked someone to bring you up to date today on the subject of your connected car. Michael, welcome.
Thanks very much, Jane, Dr. J. The average American spends close to 2 hours every day commuting to and from work. That's a lot of time to be trapped and strapped in. The auto industry has been trying to find ways to entertain and educate us for a very long time. The first commercial in-car radio sold in 1930. FM radio came along in 52. And then, of course, cassette players, CD players. Oh, I forgot, 8-tracks.
Yes, I was going
really
to point that
myself.
Out.
Dr. J, you don't remember 8-tracks at all, I'm
Well,
sure.
As a matter of fact, I do, but we don't need to dwell on that either. Yeah, I was going to point out that you forgot 8-track.
Yes, well, but, you know, now streaming audio is how a lot of us receive our entertainment in the car, but is having Pandora or Spotify in your car really all that the connected car has to offer? Toby Trevarthen thinks there's a lot more. He's a visionary when it comes to the kinds of services that connected car can provide. He's worked for AOL and Harman International. Now he's involved in a number of high-impact, high-octane startups, including Drive Time Metrics, Spatial Shift, and Streamwise. Toby, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with definitions. When I say connected car, what do we really mean? What are we really talking about?
I think that's a good question, and I think there's kind of a multifaceted answer depending on who you're talking to. I think from a consumer perspective, there's still some confusion on the term itself, or a lack of even knowing what it is. I think a recent Nielsen study came out that cited, you know, less than 20% of the American population had even heard that term before. And then in the industry itself, depending on who you're talking to, you know, connected car could mean Pandora to a segment of the world. And then in the specifics in the automotive industry, it could mean the information flowing out of the car that has to do with, you know, in-vehicle knowledge relating to, you know, speeds and things that, you know, would be tracking the maintenance of the vehicle while you're in it. So it's a very convoluted place.
Well, and obviously getting information like the efficiency of the engine, all sorts of maintenance stuff, that's information that for the most part the consumer can't get. Obviously, now that there are so many microchips within the car itself, the auto dealer should be able to access that information. But as far as the consumer services go, if it is something like Pandora and Spotify, why not just plug your smartphone into using a connector? What's the big deal? Why should I be spending more money for a new gadget in my dash?
Good question, and there's a lot of proponents out there who would suggest that is exactly where we should go. You know, the mobile forces obviously feel that way, as do some of the content partners, because they have built their business on the backs of mobile. I think one of the biggest issues regarding that question has to do with driver safety, which is governed pretty, you know, strictly with the U.S. government controls with NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Association. And in the industry, there's really two views of this. There's the built-in version versus the brought-in version. The brought-in version is what you just spoke of, where someone will just port their information from their mobile phone into the car. And then the built-in version would be akin to what GM did by putting Wi-Fi into the vehicles, and you now have a hotspot in the vehicle. And the car guys, you know, feel that's a much safer way to experience, you know, the entertainment or the information that's now flowing through the car.
So I seem to remember a couple of years ago at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the connected car was really the big deal. It's what everybody was demonstrating. There was an awful lot of hype, and then really haven't heard very much about it. Is that is my recollection correct? And if so, what's happened?
Well, actually, this year at CES, the hype is actually getting louder. But I think a lot of the context of the hype is now around the driverless car, the automated car, which, you know, Google's been pushing. BMW and Audi both have versions of that, and even Volvo now has that capability as well. But I think as it relates to information in the car, it seems like the Wi-Fi aspects of this is now kind of where the attention is, and GM has done a very good job at, you know, promoting the benefits of that by turning your car literally into this hotspot so that you can receive all this streaming information that now exists out there. So on some level, the hype's getting louder, but the actual executions are still kind of, you know, in development, so to speak.
So I want to get to the driverless car a little bit later. What sort of numbers are we talking about? How many cars are there on the road now that are connected?
The last stats I saw, you know, had us somewhere around the 20 million range in this year, 2015. And you've got wild forecasts, depending on what source you look at, where these numbers will climb towards 100 million vehicles connected on the road, probably by the, you know, end of this decade.
So you and I have talked a lot about connected cars over the past few years, and every time I talk to you, I continue to be dazzled by the vision. So do me a favor, dazzle the audience. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but, you know, dazzle Dr. J and explain to her, give her an idea of some of the kinds of services that we're talking about, which are you know, just not out there now, and really not that difficult. I mean, they're not that far off in the future.
I am ready to be dazzled.
I am on the spot now. I would suggest that we are still at the 1.0 version of what's capable. There's a lot of discussion around kind of the 2.0 and the 3.0, which 3.0 to me is the driverless car kind of context. 2.0 is kind of starting to realize the potential of the vehicle meets the streaming, meets the Internet of Things that you referred to earlier in the start of this dialogue. So, for instance, when I was at Harman on AHA Radio, one of the things we actually executed was one of the first interactive ads that ran in the car for Quiznos. And effectively, an audio ad ran, and on the display, it showed a graphic of Domino's, or excuse me, Quiznos, and it had dynamically delivered in the offer relative to where you were in the vehicle at that time. So it was definitely a kind of moment marketing opportunity that enabled the user to, and this, by the way, was targeted at 11 a.m. Around the time you're thinking about food, and then again later at like 4 a.m. So it used standard time sequence marketing that, you know, radio typically uses. But this was a scenario where you could have an impression run, a person could touch the screen and identify that, yes, I want that offer. And then we beamed a coupon to their phone. And then you could literally take that offer into a Quiznos and have it scanned at the POS system. So from an advertising perspective, it was the holy grail of the impression ran, an engagement occurred, and I now tracked it specifically to a sale.
That sounds like a very seamless project, and I want to talk more about that. Tell us some more about that in the second half of today's interview. And I am talking with Michael Theodore and his guest, Toby Trevarthan. I'm Jane Karwoski, and you are listening to The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Back up important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where Michael Theodore and I are chatting with Toby Trevarthan. Carry on, Toby. You were telling us about later, more types of services available through the connected car.
Sure. I think, you know, as we go forward, the idea of voice is going to become more and more important in this construct, because you're constantly dealing with cognitive issues of driving and interacting with, you know, information flow in your car, which
right.
is what the safety people are concerned with. So the people who are designing these experiences definitely have to take that into consideration. But I could envision a day very soon, because all the pieces are in place, where let's say you want to go to a Chipotle and you're hungry and you typically order four things, and today you happen to want that salad you always order, so you push number one on the screen, and on the screen literally would pull up a Chipotle menu, if you will, or my Chipotle channel. I would order my number one, and the car would be able to tell the nearest Chipotle that you're 20 minutes away, because it could send a signal that basically tells you how far out you are. the Chipotle, store would know to start making your food within the 10 minutes of your delivery. And by then, you also would have already paid for it because the payment systems would be in place to allow the car to transact directly with the store. And then you literally pull in your Chipotle at pickup, and someone hands you the bag, and you never get out of your car.
So it sounds like there's an ease and facilitating of your daily activities. But, yeah, that driver distraction issue, which I was getting into in my own doctoral program in terms of audio distraction. But the expert on that is a Dr. Strayer from the University of Utah. What are they saying now in terms of driver distraction issues?
Well, I think the NHTSA rules is what's called the two-second rule, and that's more designed for at-a-glance kind of constraints, where they don't want you glancing for longer than 2, maybe 3 seconds. But that's typically what you do when you change a channel or you're adjusting your thermostat or some typical behavior that you already do in the car. So I think a lot of these experiences need to be designed with that in mind. And from the cognitive perspective, that's really a pretty subjective area that I know a lot of people, are continuously testing. But I'll just leave it at that as a subjective area that probably will require more insight.
But the safety experts, the government seems much more concerned about taking your eyes off the road and having to interact physically with an object more than voice. I mean, while there are laws against using a phone if you're going to be holding it in your hand and dialing in a number, to my knowledge, no one has enacted any legislation that prevents hands-free communication. And voice is certainly, when you combine it with some of the intelligent agents like Siri, that's where some of the exciting stuff really comes to play. I remember we discussed integrating a tool like Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, into the connected car so that your calendar could tell you while you're driving, not only is it giving you directions to that appointment that's 20 miles down the road, but will remind you that it's now 12 o'clock, you've got an hour until your appointment, aren't you hungry? It knows that you like a particular restaurant, it will tell you where the nearest one of your favorite restaurants is and make a reservation for you. And that's an example I would think of where there's a lot of discrete systems involved. They can all do those things for you. It's a matter of integrating it so that the whole thing is a seamless experience.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Google Now is already technically there on the phone. And I would imagine, given what they're doing in the car, that and with Android being a potential operating system for many vehicles, that that's not too far away. There is a car, a company called CloudMade in Silicon Valley that is literally building what you just described for the OEMs as a solution for an infotainment product offering.
So let's talk about, I'm not sure whether this would be 2.0 or 3.0, but maybe it's 2.5. And it's when your car can start communicating with other devices that you own. For example, your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you're out of eggs you're going to be want to make breakfast the next morning?
Yeah, I think effectively, with the idea of notifications and alerts, I could easily envision where that information is aligned with, let's say, a Safeway or a Kroger, such that, you know, you've got some triggered activity associated with the refrigerator that says you're out of butter and out of milk, add it to the list, and then that could be sent to you as a verbal notification in the car, knowing that it's, you know, 5 p.m., you are now driving home, and the notification could pop into your car and say, hey, don't forget, you need to pick up butter and milk, and then, oh, by the way, your nearest Safeway is two exits ahead. Technologically, that's all capable. Just getting it all wired together is, you know, I guess, where the 2.5 part comes in.
So let's go all the way to the driverless car. Why is a company like Google interested in the driverless car in the first place?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. One, you brought up in the early part of your opening, the idea that you're in your vehicle 2 hours a day, and if you can imagine how much Google interfaces with you over the course of your day, adding two more hours to that is a very lucrative proposition, because odds are if you don't have to focus on cars and obstacles in your path, you're probably using Google in some manner to you know, utilize those 2 hours better. The second piece of that, I think, is the altruistic element, where when you start looking at, you know, statistics of death by accidents on the road, and impaired driving incidences on the road, you know, a driverless vehicle could obviously improve those statistics tremendously. And I think that's, you know, another angle that Google's looking at.
They could certainly combine some of those aspects. I can see a combination of sensory devices, et cetera, on cars while you are engaged with Siri or, you know, the communication. Because the point you mentioned, Michael, in terms of voice and audio, one of the reasons there aren't laws perhaps forbidding hands-free communication, but the research shows that because the person you're speaking to, like in these days, over the phone while you're driving, does not share the visual field that you are seeing. So that's why it's more challenging and more dangerous than talking to a person next to you in the car. When you're in the car together, you're both observing. When someone is totally removed in a different situation, completely different environment, then it does raise the risk.
Sure. I mean, there are times I've driven past my exit because I've been so engrossed in a conversation with someone. Forget the nuisance factor of having to double back. It means that I was totally oblivious to what was going on for a certain period of time. I wasn't present. And that's a scary thought if I'm navigating a highway at 60 miles an hour.
And people often will...
I've actually done that listening to an audiobook. Where you're so engrossed in the book, you just blow right through your exit.
Right. And people will also slow down. That's the most frequent hazard, you might say, is that when they're on their phone or feel that they're being impaired somehow, they will slow down. But that in itself can be a hazard.
So, you know, Toby, you offered two reasons why Google might be interested in the driverless car, and they're not mutually exclusive, although if I had to choose between the motives, one is to make more money selling advertising, and the other is to benefit mankind. I know which way I would assume the company would go, but that's me. I'm a cynical person. But is there, in fact, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that the connected car, is this really just a case of technology wagging the dog, or do you think there really is real consumer demand for the services that this technology can provide? Or, and there's yet a third option, which is that for the most part, people don't even know what the real opportunities are. Everything is kind of pie in the sky right now, and most of the connected cars that I've seen that are actually out there are just offering other entertainment channels without it being anything all that different.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, there's I guess two answers, two perspectives on that. To your point, right now I think we're seeing a lot of incrementality where people are, the car manufacturers are offering things out there in an incremental way. I think a lot of that has to do with risk mitigation, because there's a lot of liability riding on this. It's not like, you know, you're just using your mobile phone, you're walking. If you walk into a pole, who do you sue? If you're driving your car and you're distracted by something in it, then, you know, people are opened up for legal situations. So there's that concern that I think is why, you know, you've got a 100-year-old industry that's moving in incremental margins. And then conversely, if you go back to Henry Ford's quote that, you know, brought the car to existence, is that if you polled the consumers and asked them what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. Not a car, right? So I think we're kind of at that juncture, almost like a Henry Ford 2.0, where you've got companies like Google and Apple who, because of technology and because of streaming and because of where we are, the possibilities of what could be deemed transportation is shifting. And I guess one giant example of that in my mind is Uber. You know, if you think about what is Uber, is it a car? Is it a taxi service? Is it a black car service? And, you know, I would suggest it's like a super intelligent logistics company that just happens to use vehicles as their transportation means. And what they're doing to the industry is going to have wider, farther implications than all this connected car stuff we're talking about.
Right, right. It's very disruptive.
Yes.
I'm a little reluctant to put my faith in Henry Ford 2.0, only because Henry Ford 1.0 is the guy who said they can have any color they want as long as it's black. So, he sometimes wasn't the most, not always the most far-sighted. One more question, and that's about the data. There's a potential for an enormous amount of data to be generated. Connected car will know every single place you drive to. It's like having the black box that's in a plane. It'll know every
yep.
single place that you're going, mm-hmm. driving. You know, there's an opportunity for an insurance company to say, hey, can we have access to that black box so that we know exactly what speed the customer, the client drives at, so we can see how he rides the brake. Is he a safe driver or not? You know, that's an opportunity. Would people be willing to save 50% off their insurance policy if the insurance company could have access to the black box? You know, it's a real moral and business question. Are there any discussions about who owns the data right now?
Lots. And I also think that's one of the big sticking points on how fast this all is going to evolve. Europe obviously is much more protective of personal data. I know when we were doing things in France and Germany, they are at the forefront of that, and usually the most the highest obstacles to overcome are those two countries. I think, to your point, we're almost going to have to come up with a HIPAA-like context around the vehicle that, you know, is forthcoming out of your car. On some level, you know, the car is really just a giant mobile device that can go up to, you know, 100 miles an hour. So it's a more robust mobile experience. And you've already opted away a lot of your location intelligence to the Googles and the Facebooks of the world. So the car is merely just an extension of that. That said, to the point you just brought up on the insurance piece, you know, you've got some data in there that is potentially, you know, life-altering to some individuals. And if that ever got out, you know, in terms of my daily routes, I tend to have the same patterns, which is pretty typical for humans. You know, that leaves you susceptible to, you know, bad things. Mm-hmm. And if it were ever to leak back that your car, you know, leaked that data or that data got out to someone who did, you know, something malicious, yeah, that would cause a lot of legal actions, I would assume.
Well,
right, and I can see the government, you know, it would be the similar to a wiretap, would be able to put a tracer on certain people's black boxes so that it could track all the information.
We'll have to leave it at that. As usual, we come to some social and political quandaries with this sort of thing. But thank you so much, Michael, for your participation today in another of the Anything Digital series.
My pleasure. Always fun to be here.
And thank you, Toby, for joining us, Toby Trevarthan.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. Please mention to your social networks, online and off, that you enjoy the Social Network Show. And if you're listening via iTunes, please add us to your playlist. So until we welcome you here again, please have fun and be safe online and off.
You've been listening to the Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.